we are a speaker meeting, and it falls to me to introduce our speaker tonight. And this particular person has celebrated a clean time milestone fairly recently. And it's a real pleasure to introduce her, actually. It's been amazing to watch her come into these meetings and kind of find recovery and go through the things that she's gone through and become a kind of valuable member of the Highland and Islands service team and also become part of the Highlands and Islands family. So I don't know, I've never heard their story. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Tara, who's going to share for up to 40 minutes on our experience, strength and hope. So Tara, the floor is yours. Please share with us. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Steve.
Hi, I'm Tara and I'm an addict.
Hi, Tara.
Thank you for asking me to do the main share. I'm incredibly nervous, so if I'm stumbling over my words, apologies in advance. Okay. I'm not really sure where to start, so I guess I'm going to start at the beginning. So I was born into a highly dysfunctional family. Both of my parents were alcoholics. And as far as I'm aware, things were already pretty bad at that point. I was on the at-risk register from birth. So that should give you like a bit of an indication where things were at. And obviously in my early years, I can only go off what I've been told, but as far as I know, my care fell down to my sister and my two brothers. Now my sister's only 3 years older than me, and my brother's 5 years older than me, I believe. That's really bad that I don't know how old he is. So obviously, a 3 and 5 year old aren't, we're never going to be able to care for a newborn particularly well. And things just got really, really bad really quickly. And at the age of 4, I was taken into care, or we were all taken into care on a court order, after my mum tried to take our life. So I was taken to a foster placement with my sister. Obviously we were taken to hospital and whatever first, and everything was fine, obviously. So I was taken into care with my sister, and my brothers both went to their father. And the people that we were given to were highly manipulative and emotionally abusive people. So where we should have, you know, been given to people and our situation should have got a lot better, it just didn't. And I firmly believe that experience the experience I had with my parents and that first set of foster carers really set the path for all of the mental health issues that I suffer with today. So kind of fast forward to when I'm 7. So I've lived with these people from when I was 4 till 7. They put in an application to adopt me and my sister. Now, because me and my sister have different fathers, her dad said yes and mine said no. So I was moved to another foster placement and separated from my sister, who obviously was the only person that I had lived with throughout my whole life, which is, as you can imagine, was really, really unsettling. And that kind of just set the tone for the next few years. I lost touch with my sister for quite a long time. and I was moved from foster placement to foster placement. I went back to my mum a couple of times, but that never worked out. I think in the end, I ended up having something like 24 foster placements in 14 years, which is absolutely insane. But yeah, this second set of foster carers were, you know, had I been able to stay with them, I might have been okay. I found out years later that they wanted to adopt me, which at the age I was never told that, you know, that was an option. So I chose to go back and live with my mum because I had a really fierce sense of loyalty to my mum and to my whole family, really. And even at that young of an age, when I would have been 8, nearly 9 at that point, it had been drummed into me that, you know, family is more important than anything. You don't turn your back on family. So I said that I wanted to go back and live with my mum, and that lasted for a year. When she was taken to a psychiatric ward, and kind of in that year, I had been looking after her. So I'd gone from being in this really happy home, where I was a child, I was looked after as a child should be. And I had some really lovely experiences with these people, to going back to live with my mum, having to do the cooking, the cleaning, the shopping. I was seen a few times walking a good 7 miles to town and back with shopping. And yet nobody kind of picked up on that. I was seen by school teachers. Obviously, I don't really know what happened with that, but nobody did anything to step in anyway. And I can remember, I can particularly remember one night, I was at home with my mum, and there was The Simpsons on telly, and in this episode their house was on fire, and she was convinced that the fire was going to come out of the telly. And I kind of knew that something wasn't right, but as a 9-year-old little girl, I didn't know what to do about it. And it was actually our upstairs neighbour that ended up phoning an ambulance for my mum. And even as the ambulance was coming, I can remember packing my mum's bag for her to take to hospital, and trying to tell her, you know, that she can't smoke in hospital because she wanted to take cigarettes. And just feeling all of this overwhelming responsibility. And that was put on me, that responsibility was put on me by my mum, for a lot of years. Like, you don't just get to that place overnight where you're parenting your parent. So we were both taken off in the ambulance, and she went to the psychiatric ward, and I went back into care. And this was for another couple of years. So by this point, I was just starting secondary school. And throughout all of, so I'm going to jump back and forth a little bit. Throughout all of my childhood, I was a painfully shy child. I always either had my head in a book or was just sat kind of on my own. I didn't really interact with other children. And I don't think I really knew how. Yeah, I know that I was very, very insecure, always fearing my current caregivers, whichever foster carer that was at the time, deciding that they didn't want me anymore and having to move again. I kind of, all of my instincts to, I guess, protect myself and look after myself were, you know, I wasn't allowed to, for those instincts to grow, basically. I just became really, really complacent in the hopes that if I was good enough, you know, somebody might want to keep me. And obviously today I can see that that's not what was happening. But as a child, it just felt like I was being kind of punished by me being moved around all these different homes. But yeah, my mum's just gone to the psychiatric unit, and I'm with a different set of carers who again are lovely. They're really, really nice people. And I'm with them up until the summer before I go to secondary school. So by this point, my mum's out of hospital and has been out of hospital for quite a while and has been working on getting me to come back and live with her. And she was a very manipulative woman and a highly emotionally abusive one. So she kind of encouraged me to make problems within the foster home. And the way that she treated me, I look back and see now it was all very deliberate to kind of mess with my head to get the end result of me living back with her, which is what she wanted. So I put these foster carers through hell. Like, I look back and I feel really, really guilty about some of the stuff that I did. And I have to keep reminding myself that I was just a child. So I went back and lived with my mum again. And she allowed me to start going and staying overnight with my dad. Now, my contact with my dad was court ordered to be supervised. And I didn't know at the time, but it was court ordered to be supervised for a very, very good reason. And my mother knew this and knew why. But she decided to let me go and stay overnight with him whenever I wanted. And like, obviously I wanted to go and stay there overnight. It was my dad, I loved him, and he didn't want to see me under social services rules. I've never told my story like this before. So it's really hard to get it all out. So I ended up being sexually abused by my father. And again, looking back on it, I can see that, you know, he was also incredibly emotionally abusive, and I'd been getting groomed for many, many years. And I already knew that I couldn't tell my mum about it. When I left my father's, I went home, and she'd started screaming about how she wished that I'd been adopted and not my sisters, and not my sister. So having just gone through that experience and then kind of being almost rejected, that really kind of was the last nail in the coffin of me speaking out to anyone. And again, I don't really know why, but a few weeks later, I was taken back into care, and that was the last time that I lived with my mum for a really long time. But the damage was done. At that point, I was already smoking. I had started stealing her cigarettes. I was lying. I can already see the patterns forming of trying to find some kind of self-worth through relationships, even at 11 years old. Like, while they weren't serious relationships because I was a young child, I was always chasing a relationship. So yeah, that kind of is where my downward spiral started, really. So I kind of went from smoking cigarettes at 11 years old to by 12, kind of by the tail end of 12, I was smoking cannabis. And then came drinking, and I'd be running away from my foster placements, generally acting out, often because I was in a lot of emotional pain. But I didn't know this. I didn't know why I was doing all these things. I just, like everyone else told me, I was, you know, I just put it down to being a really naughty kid. But I was never taught the skills. Well, I don't know if anyone would have been able to be taught the skills to deal with what I went through, but I never had any emotional coping skills. So the only way that I knew how to cope was to make it so I didn't feel anymore. And I'd done that from a really young age through, like, I often joke about reading was my first addiction. So when I lost myself in a book, I didn't have to think, I wasn't in my head. And then it came to fixing my feelings with eating. I can remember one Christmas sitting on some steps of a foster placement when I was about 8 years old and eating my whole advent calendar. And I just moved in, so just moved into that place. And it was totally comfort eating. But I can see all of these different patterns going back from when I was really, really young. So the fact that I eventually started drinking and got into drugs really doesn't surprise me. Like, my whole attitude around it, even at my eldest brother's 18th birthday party, and I would have been, I think I would have been 10, and I was allowed a bottle of baby sham, but I was told that I had to have lemonade in it. It makes me laugh, but I was told that I had to drink this baby sham with lemonade in it. But I insisted that I wanted to drink it out of the bottle, and I was swigging out this bottle of baby sham, and I didn't want it with lemonade. I just wanted it straight. So, like, if I look at that, while it was only baby sham, I was only 10. But the process of that kind of already showed my attitudes around alcohol. You know, I wanted as much of it and as strong as possible in the shortest time. Yeah, I had my first drink at 13, which I think I drank about a quarter of a bottle of Jack Daniels. And I was so ill. Like, I got drunk downstairs in my then foster carer's house with her daughter's boyfriend. And he was a lot older than I was, and, you know, I can't really remember a lot of it because I was very, very drunk, but, you know, some stuff happened that really what shouldn't have happened. But the hangover that I felt the next morning was horrendous. And I think that had any normal 13-year-old experienced that, they probably wouldn't have gone back for more for quite a while. But that was it. I was, you know, I was hooked. I loved how it made me feel. I felt confident. I felt like I felt attractive. I liked myself when I'd been drunk. So I started, when I ran away from my foster placements, I'd go to the shops with my friends, and I'd be stealing alcohol. We'd be getting older boys to go and buy it for us. And I was putting myself in really dangerous situations, going back to people's houses that I just didn't know. I was hitchhiking a good 30 miles when I was moved away from my friends, as in like an effort to try and get me away from those influences, I guess. But yeah, my drinking and drug use got really bad really quickly. And by the time I was, by the time I was 16, I knew that there was a problem. But I didn't really know what to do about it. And I remember at 17 sitting down with one of my foster carers and, you know, saying that I had a problem. I was drinking too much. And their solution was to just stop, which, like, obviously I couldn't do. And they obviously had no experience of addiction, and they just wouldn't have known what to do with that information. But they happened to be my last set of foster carers, and they really saved me. They are incredible people who are still in my life today. And I was still running away and taking drugs and drinking when I'd moved in with them. And they just showed me so much love, and so much understanding. And, like, again, I know that I put them through hell. Like, when I was running away, just how worried that I could see they were when I got found by the police. And eventually, you know, something happened when I realized that, you know, I was 17 years old. In a few months, I was going to be turning 18 and nobody would come looking for me. So I did stop running away and I really settled down. But a lot of damage had been done at that point. And I ended up leaving that foster family at 18 years old and moving in with a much, much older boyfriend. And that's where my habit of getting into inappropriate, abusive relationships started. So a few months after that, I was living in a women's refuge again at 18 years old. And I just remember being really, really scared. But I just drank and used, and I wasn't in a good place. Like, I look back and I've had mental health issues. The first time that I can identify feeling depressed or feeling depression, is about when I was 14 years old. So, yeah, I was using, I was drinking on top of taking medication for my medication for my mental health, and it just wasn't a good mix. And it got worse and worse and worse from there, where I started taking abusing prescription drugs. So I managed to get the doctor to prescribe me morphine and tramadol. Which I was taking and drinking on top of and smoking on top of. And how I'm alive, I really don't know. I firmly believe that the cocktail of drugs that I was taking, sent me into psychosis. And it was never diagnosed, but things that I did, like, I'm really not proud of, but I did things like trying to stab my boyfriends. I was self-harming regularly from the age of 13. Just the way that I was thinking, it was absolutely nuts. Like, I really wasn't okay. You know, I carried on like that for until I was 22. And at that point, I just wanted to die. Like, I'd been suicidal for a lot of years, but I had no fight left in me at that point. I was living on my own in a flat in Lampeter. Not that any of you are going to know what that is. And my mum had just died. So I'd helped care for my mum, through her brain and lung cancer. how I kind of got through that, I don't know, but I was helping my brother care for her. He was her main carer, and going back to my house on weekends and just using and drinking until I had to go back. And it was one of the hardest things that I'd at that point that I felt I'd done. But I'd already tried a different fellowship a few years ago, when I was 20, I'd gone to AA. So I kind of knew a little bit about, I knew what NA was. And I can remember just being in my flat on my own, being really, really drunk, feeling so, so scared, like that feeling of fear and anxiety just was with me all of the time. And just sitting on the floor crying, just asking for help, and just sorry, I just needed, I knew that I either needed to find a way to stop or I couldn't carry on the way that I was in my head. I either had to stop or kill myself. And I hid. I can't explain this to this day, but there was a voice in my head, which said, try NA. So I kind of made a deal with myself that day that I'd try NA for a year. And if it didn't work, if after I'd given it a real good go and it didn't work, I was going to go and kill myself. And I had this plan of how I was going to do it, which I won't go into. So I got hold of a lady who's now my sponsor. And she told me when the next meeting was, and I went, and when I walked into that first meeting, I could barely pick my head up off the floor. I couldn't look anyone in the eye. I think I did ramble out a share of, my name's Tara, I need some help. I'm using too many drugs and drinking too much, but if you'd had my life, you'd be drinking this much too. and that brought me so much shame for such a long time. But I kept going to these meetings, and I did a meeting every night, which I live in a really small area of West Wales. So apart from on a Sunday, because there was no meetings on a Sunday, it was a pretty mean feat. I very nearly did my 1990. And I got a sponsor and I started doing the steps. And I just had so many people show me love and care. And it kept me coming back until I was able to kind of stand on my own two feet. And I can't explain what's happened. I guess it's a spiritual awakening, whatever you want to call it, but I didn't kill myself and I don't take drugs anymore. And kind of seeing the progress in my recovery, going from that person who can't even pick her head up off the floor to willingly agreeing to do a main share, is incredible. Like, I was told when I came into the rooms that, you know, one day people in NA, people in the meetings would hear my story. And I kind of thought, yeah, right, I'm not telling anyone what's in my head. So to be given that opportunity to is just amazing and a blessing. And I hope I've made some sense. But I just want to say that, you know, if you're struggling or you're new, then, or you're not sure that you're meant to be here, the advice that I was given when I told someone that I didn't know if I should be in NA was to keep coming back until I was sure either way. And I wish I could remember who told me that, because they were a big part in keeping me alive in my early days. But yeah, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you.